You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Kana Supers family. Today, this show will be a little bit different. I jumped on a podcast with Cooper Carlson from Minnesota Sports Daily. I'm going to plug that conversation into this podcast, so obviously it will feel like I'm kind of being the interviewee rather than the interviewer, but we had a really good conversation about all things Timberwolves, from the rookies in Summer League to Karl Anthony Towns and how we think he's going to look, and then D'Lo and Ant and what this team's overall potential is. So I'll plug that in now, and hopefully you enjoy the show.
And welcome back, everybody. Minnesota Sports Daily Podcast. The guest today, Jake Painting at Howls and Growls Substack. Jake, how are you doing today? Is that going well? I'd assume it is. It's great writing you do over there.
Yeah, I am doing well. And it's going really well. I obviously started it only a few weeks ago, and I've got more subscribers than I thought I would. So I'm really happy with how it's going and really having a lot of fun with it.
Wonderful. And as a subscriber, I can recommend everyone go. It's great stuff. Great stuff. So go check that out. But today, as we got Jake on, we're going to talk, of course, Minnesota Timberwolves. Summer League's going on. They're 3-0, the champions every year. It's great fun. Champions of something, Ellie. So we'll discuss that. Nathan Wright. Yeah, whoops, my bad. But
that's
I know
McKinley
what I'm talking
Wright
about, I
and,
swear.
And Nathan
right.
Knott put together.
Right. But yeah, we'll discuss those guys, Summer League, and then we'll get to basically just a broad Wolves conversation, talking about the big three on the Wolves team, Cat, Ant, D'Lo. But as always, Spotify, Apple, you can find me there. YouTube.com, Minnesota Sports Daily, where I'll upload daily clips, so go check that out, subscribe. But yeah, Jake, I mean, you got Substack. You're not doing anything else except the Paint Points podcast, right?
Yeah, no, just the Substack and the Paint Points podcast. Obviously, I was over at Kana Supers,
right,
like you are now, which
right.
is really good to see. So I was doing that, and then, yeah, kind of switched over to the Substack, and that's where all my writing is at the moment. So about 3 articles a week, and then the podcast as well, obviously, which we will try and get this audio up onto
yes.
the podcast as well. So if we can figure out the technical side of things, but yeah, that's kind of takes up all my time at the moment, along with life and how stressful that is by itself.
Of course. Wonderful. Yeah, so same here. I get that. But yeah, talking Wolves, Summer League, they're now 3-0. It went great. They blew out the Bolt. Who they play today? I'm messing everything up. The Bucks. Got it. They played the Bucks, the Bulls, and the Spurs. I'm out of it. I just got home. I'm rushing into this. Whatever. Anyways, yeah, they played today. Had a really nice game. Jaden McDaniels showed off. So did Jalen Noel. Nathan Knight got it that time. Played all right, you know, bit of a downer, but he's doing all right. Performances so far, who have you been impressed with? I guess obviously McDaniels and Noel, but have any of them surprised you? We kind of expected this, right?
Yeah, I think Noel I definitely expected. He has that summer league kind of game, I think, where
right.
it's like the scorer, and summer league defenses are really average, just, you know, teams
yeah.
that have had a week or two to kind of set a defense and try and work with a bunch of guys they've probably never played with before. So Noel I expected. McDaniels I was a little bit more iffy on. We know that he's obviously like an all-world defender,
right,
we've seen that at the NBA level, but I wasn't sure how he'd go kind of being the main guy offensively, and I think he's been really good, like better than I expected, I think, especially today and probably that last game against the Bulls as well. That was really really encouraging. I think he still has a lot of work to do on his ball handling and stuff like that. But just attacking off the dribble and attacking off the catch and still hitting threes, and then also playing really good defense while having that bigger kind of workload as an offensive player, that's been really impressive to me, I think. Nathan Knight, I guess, I wasn't sure what to expect with him at all because I hadn't watched much of him in Atlanta. Kind of is the guy that is advertised, that hustle guy and energy and role man on offense. Again, just a really fun player, a really fun team, actually, which is nice because we don't get a lot of really fun teams to watch in Minnesota. So, is there anyone that has kind of impressed you outside of those three guys?
Outside of those three? Not really. It's like we came in and it's not expected. Exactly. Yeah. Like maybe, I mean, not really. I'm trying to think Isaiah Miller, but I mean, not really. It's like, these three is where it's at, and that's
if you dunk on a dude every night, that's
he gets the highlight plays. But McDaniels, and you think McDaniels, like, even after all this, he's scoring well, he's playing really well, he's the at least fifth guy on the team, fifth scorer. So what he's doing, if he can do this as the fifth guy, impressive. He's never going to get the in a real game get the ball and just be told to let it loose, like, you know, the famous saying of this summer league. So very encouraging to see. Absolutely. Jalen Noel the same. As for backup point guard, he's looking good. He's got to improve, I think, just his overall playmaking, just court vision and stuff, just to facilitate better. But I've been impressed, especially today, with the way he was able to kind of lead an offense, something we hadn't seen much from him. What do you think of that, Jalen Noel leading an offense?
Yeah, I agree with you how he needs to improve as a playmaker. But then I also think in today's NBA, you don't need to be like that Ricky Rubio kind of playmaker to impact an offense, especially as a backup point guard, a point guard like D'Angelo Russell, who's probably going to get, you know, 35 That's minutes fair. A night. Like, he's not going to be playing, I don't think, these huge roles, Noel, unless Russell gets injured, which is, he does miss, you know, 10 games normally a year around that Russell. So it's a tough one. I do think that as a gunner, as a guy who can shoot threes, who can shoot off the dribble, who can play in pick and roll as a scorer, they're definitely the characteristics you want from a backup point guard these days. You see all those the little, you know, Jalen Brunson kind of backup point guards, like that's what they do. They can pass the ball at a passable rate, but they are scorers in nature, and that's what I think Noel is, and I think that he can play that role. I like McKinley Wright as well, as a guy who's kind of more of that traditional point guard, diminutive in size, but definitely knows how to run a team, really good at the point of attack on defense, despite his size. So I think he's another option there. And obviously Jordan McLaughlin as well is, you know, we're not sure if he's going to be back or not, but if he is, I do think that McLaughlin probably would get the first crack at it. Just because I do think that he kind of blends all of those point guard talents together a little bit better than Noel, but I like Noel, man. And we saw last year that, you know, that stretch of games where he was kind of the backup point guard when McLaughlin was out with the COVID protocols and D'Angelo Russell was injured. I think that we saw him do a pretty good job as just a scoring guard. And if they do opt to go for that this season, I don't think I'll be, you know, upset about it.
Yeah. So I was, you know, going to kind of answer the question, but are we comfortable going with a internal guy for backup point guard? Because they traded away Ricky Rubio, and now you mentioned the options. Guys like McKinley Wright, Jordan McLaughlin, Jalen Noel, probably the three options for backup point guard. And again, it's not like this is a giant role, but Russell goes down, you're going to need someone. Hell, I mean, every game, they're just going to need someone to play backup point guard. Do they want to go internal or do they search externally? I think they're going to make another, not, I don't know if impact addition is the right word, but someone who plays on a nightly basis, at least. I don't think they're done. They've done really nothing. So they've got trade windows going to come soon. I mean, I think they're going to add someone. Could it be a backup point guard? Do you think that's the route they take?
No, I don't think it is, just because it kind of has been a theme, I guess, until last season when they swung for that Rubio trade. They've kind of always just had that average guy as a backup point guard, the kind of guy who doesn't really
Does it make a difference that this is the first, the year they're actually trying, though? Because maybe those years they've been at it and just been like, well, we're not going to be that good. But it's I kind of think that
a backup point guard, if you have a really good one, obviously it's a huge coup. But
it's not, it,
It's not, sure. Like, it's kind of a very replaceable position, yeah. I think. It's kind of like a backup center. Like, I think that you can find pretty kind of comparable guys for small salaries, and that is a Jordan McLaughlin archetype of player, I think. And McKinley Wright, I think, is very similar to McLaughlin in the way that they're kind of just a do-it-all kind of point guard that don't do anything really, really well, but do everything at a capable level, and then Noel's kind of the antithesis of that, where he's the gunner, the scorer, the guy who's going to play with the ball in his hands a lot, not really a guy who gets the ball up the floor and passes off to others as soon as he has the chance, more of a guy who's going to look for his own shot first. I think that gives you a twofold option, and you kind of battle it out in training camp or battle it out throughout the season to see which one wins that, you know, that race. And I think that's enough. I honestly do think that's enough. Sure. I think that if you could go and get a really good backup point guard, obviously, like, you could. Yeah, but I think at this point, that ship has sailed. So at this point, I think if you are going to go and get someone else, I'd like it to be another wing who can shoot, or obviously another power forward who can bruise a little bit and who can play next to Towns in a pinch. So for me, I would like a better backup point guard than those guys. But I think in terms of the list of priorities, it's probably not very high.
Yeah, and I try to balance, like, this is the year they're winning with, well, those guys, I mean, again, Noel's been here for a couple of years, like, he's been developing, it's maybe time for him to step in. Same with McLaughlin, like, he's been here for a while, it's not like they're rookies anymore, it's time to maybe step up to that role that they've been developing for, so, maybe that's a good idea.
If Noel is a part of your future, this is the year that he has to really become a part of your future. If not, then he's probably got to be a trade chip or someone that you can throw in a deal, because, you know, if you can't play the role that they envision for him this year, then when is he going to start to play that role,
right?
You know?
This is his third year, right?
It should be. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I'm with you there. Noel, step up, dude. Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then power forward, I guess. We talked about McDaniels. We talked about Nathan Knight. Are either of them guys you're comfortable with the team starting a power forward? Is it Torian Prince? Or do they? I think they've got to add someone. I don't know who it is. But if you really are serious upon this is the year we want to win. And I'm big on their team right now has a chance to be like a 10th seed, but I mean, really, to just push for a guaranteed 10th seed, I think you need a power forward. Again, I don't know where that comes from. They've tried everything, I feel. How could they not be, right? They've been trying for years. I mean, obviously they've come up empty, but McDaniels, Knight, Prince, are you comfortable with any of them at the 4? I like McDaniels at the 3 much more, and I think the team does too, so I don't think he's starting at the 4. He's probably, what, a 6th man? Do you think he's even starting? I just asked you like 3 questions there, but
are we talking about McDaniels?
Yeah. McDaniels.
I think McDaniels for sure starts. I think at the 3. I think even if they don't have a guy who they feel like is
so, then
better
Beasley
at the 4,
would be off the bench.
Yeah, I think Beasley comes off the bench. I think if they don't have a guy they think is better at the 4, they still start McDaniels at the 3, just because they've kind of preached that's the position they want him to play. I'm a Vanderbilt guy, man. Like,
I knew that.
I am a huge Vanderbilt guy. I know.
I just want to bring him back, you know. Just bring him back.
I think they'll definitely. Bring him back. Yeah, I think they're kind of just letting the market, you know, set itself, which seems to be pretty low. Like, no team seems to be coming in with some sort of grand slam offer for Vando. So, I think they bring him back, and I think they start him at the 4. I hope they do. I don't think that he's the cure-all kind of, you know, guy who's going to solve all their problems at the 4. It's still a position of need. It's still the position that needs.
He's the best of the limited options, though.
Yeah, you know? He's the best of a bad bunch. Right. So, I just think, you know, the numbers with McDaniels or Robert Covington of, you know, players like that have always been pretty bad next to Towns. With Vanderbilt, they've been actually really good. I know he's... I think we lose sight of how good Vanderbilt is defensively because of his flaws on offense, and just because he isn't the, you know, the big, tall, kind of rim-protecting guy that I think a lot of us assume we need next to Towns. Because of that, I think, we lose sight of actually how good Vanderbilt was, whether it's numbers, film, you know, all of that stuff points in his direction. A lot of the defensive, you know, all-in-one advanced stats, which are, you know, there's a lot of noise that come along with those, but he's near the top. He's near the top at all of those. Like, I think a lot better than we'd think that he would be, you know, like 98th percentile in in estimated plus minus, 90th percentile in basketball indexes, LeBron metric. Like, it's really good. And then, like, the team was 5.8, I think, off the top of my head, points better per 100 possessions defensively when he was on the floor. Like, everything kind of points in the direction that he, if we want a guy who's going to help the defense to be the power forward, he did do that. He just did, he had spotty minutes, obviously didn't start the season in the rotation. Took him a while to get going once he got in the rotation. Then he fell back out when Finch started. And then I think eventually Finch kind of realized that he couldn't be left out of the rotation anymore. I don't know. I can't remember who it was against, but he had that one game where he kind of willed Minnesota to a win. It might've been against Miami, I think, late in the season.
Yeah. I remember something like that.
Yeah, and after that, he was the starting four for the rest of the season. So I think that Vando is the option, like we said, the best out of a bad bunch. if they need to upgrade there, I don't think they can right now unless it's a Ben Simmons.
They've certainly tried, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think they believe that Vando is the cure to all their ailments, but right now, I think he's the option. McDaniels at the three. Beasley comes off the bench as a shooter and a guy you can mix into those lineups if you want to go kind of all offense for 5 minute stretches, and then also trying to pump up that second unit as well, which is pretty poor second unit. So that would be how I would go. What is your line of thinking?
Sure. So Vando's a weird case because it's like his numbers are better than the eye test when usually it's the other way around. You know, so it's like.
Yeah.
Reading that, it was just kind of shocking, but absolutely, I'm with you. I kind of forgot about him earlier for some reason, but Vanderbilt, I think, goes to the four. A lineup, because then you've got Edwards, D'Lo, Cat all starting as your three really good offensive weapons. Vanderbilt's offense as a liability can be a liability, and it won't really hurt you. You know, if you took out one of those three scorers and replace him with another McDaniels or Vanderbilt, then maybe, but I love the idea of the three scorers and then Vanderbilt and McDaniels to kind of hold down the defense. And those two next to Cat, I think, will just make Cat an overall better defender. We've seen that just with him with good defenders, he's better.
Yeah, yeah.
Could use a better, a guard defense because D'Lo and Edwards isn't stopping really anything. Yeah. It's not stopping me and you, but you know, it is what it is.
I'm a bucket, so.
Yeah, it's nice. All right, I am not at all, so. No, I mean, I love it. I think that's a solid starting five, and that it just gets to, can they elevate the play of the second unit? Can Beasley kind of elevate to play the second year, Jalen Noel, what's going to happen there? Beasley, though, you think he's cool with being a sixth man? I think he thinks he's the best player on the floor.
Yeah, yeah. If there's one guy out of all those guys that I think would, struggle to accept their role, it is him. I think the rest of them are all pretty malleable in the way they approach the team building, and it seems like they're all pretty keen to win games, no matter what the cost is to personal accomplishments. Beasley doesn't necessarily strike me as that guy, which I don't think is a knock on him. I think that's the way that the NBA is. Yeah, and he wants to kind of squeeze as much juice out of his potential as he can. But at the end of the day, this team, I think Beasley is a starter in the lead, but not on this team. And that's not because this team is obviously really good, but it's just built. It's just
sounds
built
weird
because
they were like 23 and 49. But
yeah. It's just the way it's built. But, this team's just not built to have, a player like Beasley in the starting lineup when you have to start Cat, Ant, and D'Lo. You have to start probably McDaniels just because, the potential they see in him. He's obviously young,
he helps balance things out with his defense.
Yeah, really good defensively and can rotate between guarding the perimeter and guarding, as a rotation kind of rim protector. So, with those four, you throw in Beasley, it kind of just plays to everyone's weaknesses more than it plays to everyone's strengths. I think Cat needs a guy like Beasley on the team because he needs someone who can hit threes, especially when he's playing in the post and he's whipping those passes out. But
yeah,
it's tough. I think that if they want to win, they need Beasley to really buy into that role and make it his own. And who knows, maybe he could be a sixth man of the year contender, and maybe that would kind of ease his concerns a little bit.
And something that'll ease concerns, like winning cures everything, losing will make this worse. Like if they're winning, Beasley will buy into it. If they're not winning, he'll go, well, we'd be winning if I'm starting because I'm the best player
exactly.
here.
Like, yeah.
It all comes down to winning. If they are, I don't think he'll be mad because, once again, they're winning. Same goes with everyone. Everyone's role, you know, Jalen Noel, everyone on their team's gonna be like, all right, cool. If we're winning, it's all good. And I'm too optimistic, maybe, but last year I thought the team was gonna be good. Injuries hurt them a lot, but I do think they're going to compete for a 10-8 seed here.
Yeah, just I think my so thoughts. Too.
I think they're going to be. They should be good. Like again, they've got their big three is it's up there. They got two max guys. Cat, who's really got to start pushing here. It's mentioned on every broadcast that was on the Summer League broadcast. They just random throw in. Cat's got to start winning for his own, you know, legacy and stuff.
It's true. You can't go one Timberwolves conversation, yes. You know, with an outside source without hearing that.
Exactly. Because we've seen it with guys like Gobert and guys that aren't even like on his level. Like I think he's better than Gobert and Adebayo, but they're put ahead of him because they've won more. And obviously Jokic, Embiid, they've won a lot more. They're just better players. But Cat used to be right in the the head of that group, if not near the front, and now he's certainly fallen off quite a bit, I think. Winning, again, it cures everything. It cures that. It puts Cat where he wants to be. I think this is a huge year for him. Last year was a huge year for him, but there was a lot of, not excuses, but very good reasons for why.
Yeah. You know,
last year was kind of a throwaway, and I'm cool with that. But yeah, this year, expectations for Cat, it's probably the biggest year of his career, right? It's got to be.
Yeah, it really is. Him and D'Lo, I think, are kind of like the package deal, like Cat and Wiggins were, which I think at times brings down the perception of Cat just because he's always seems to be tethered to this other guy. And usually the other guy, you know, always the other guy hasn't been as good as him. But in general, it's just been a weird 2 years for the team. We've never really got to see this team together or any sort of consistent version of Gerson Rosas's vision, you know, until maybe the last 20 games or so of last season. And by that time, the season was over. Like, they were already out of playoff contention, and it almost made more sense to just tank the way that the pick was already with Golden State and whatnot. So it's just been a weird few years. I don't know where to put my finger on this team and on Cat. Obviously, he's a great player and a great offensive force, and I think a worthy franchise centerpiece. You know, I don't think a lot of people think that he's not the guy to build around in some cases, you know, and that he can't win because he hasn't before. I don't think that. I think that he's just never been in a situation to win. You look at some guys this season, your Devin Bookers and your Trae Young, like, that's what happens when you put a guy in a situation where he can win and where he doesn't have to drag a team by himself. I think Cat's never been put in that position. I think outside probably the Butler year, and obviously that was toxic in a whole other set of ways.
What a franchise, man.
Yeah, I don't know why. We're psychopaths for following this franchise. But I think this is the closest he gets to kind of a harmonious environment that also has enough talent to help him win. And to me, Anthony Edwards should be the guy who's now tethered to Towns like Wiggins was or like D'Lo has been. And that gives me more hope than the I am a D'Lo fan, by the way. I know there's kind of two sides of a fence to D'Angelo Russell. You kind of either hate
I'm not like
loving,
at
but
the top, because if the top people, well, this, I mean, I'm not going to say anything, but yeah.
The top can get a bit scary on Twitter if you mention his name the wrong way. Yeah. And so does the other way. You mention his name the right way, you know, some people. But I think, you know, there's an in-between there that is probably where Russell is at, and that he's a good player with flaws. Yeah. I think that Anthony Edwards is the same, but obviously has a load more potential. And if, you know, that really dynamic wing scorer and then a big man who can shoot and a big man who can score from anywhere is a tried and tested combination to win. And I think that can be this pair. So for me, Towns obviously needs to keep doing what he's always done offensively. I think he'll probably be better than he was last season offensively, just the nature of the year being a little bit less frantic for him and scary at times. And then he looks like he's in really good shape as well. I don't think he was ever in good shape really last season. I don't think he was necessarily out of shape, but I just think he didn't really have that off season where he was dedicated to the work. And then the season was obviously strange in itself, games every 2 days for virtually the entire season. There was never really time to get yourself into playing shape and into really good match shape. So Towns, for me, I think he improved defensively. I think that he he can be at the level he is, or, you know, maybe even slightly better defensively, and they can still win, but it just needs to...
Yep.
The rest of the guys need to come along with him, and I think that kind of starts with Edwards, and then obviously works its way down to D'Lo and McDaniels and stuff, but for me, Towns can't do that much more to improve his reputation without the other guys kind of building that reputation for him, you know? Like, he's done enough, I think, to win on good teams. Even with his porous defense, I think he's done enough to win if he had good teammates around him. And now's the year where they've kind of put all their eggs in one basket. They haven't done anything in this offseason. They obviously believe they can win at least, you know, 35, 40, 45 games. And that's the only thing that's going to improve his reputation. And when and if they do, I think you'll see him back in an All-Star game and back in the All-NBA conversations.
So. To being respected. Because nationally right now, his stock is at an all-time low, probably. I mean, the team, once again, went 23-49, which I tried to argue. It's like, that's not their real record. They're better than that. But 23-49, like, how much better can you be real? But again, the injuries, COVID, just a mess of a season. Like, I try to sway between, well, 23-49 isn't their real record, but they were also 26 games below 500. How much better can it be than what it was? But then it gets to, like, the 13-11 when D'Lo and Kat play together record, and or all three of them play together, and there's just so many different records we've been looking at because this team can't consistently play together. And it's like, if they can just put this one year together where they all play and they all play well, I think they'll be good. I do, and maybe, you know, my hopeless optimism getting to me again, but I don't know. It happens every year. But no, I think this team has a real shot. I think Kat, D'Lo, Edwards is a really good three-man group, and you got the guys we've mentioned. Because then I look back at 23 wins, and it's just like, it's not good, but, no, I mean, I think they're going to be good. A healthy 82 games from these guys, they can push the 8th seed, and I put it into weird math terms, is like 13-11, if you get the win percentage of that, that would have given them the 8th seed last year, so if they can just do that season long, and I believe they can. 13-11 is very reasonable for this team to do over stretch. It's the Timberwolves.
It's the West, right? Like, but I think that kind of works in their favor this year. I think of all the years, probably in the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, like Towns' whole career, this might be the softest Western Conference that there's been, and that doesn't mean that it's kind of soft in general. Like, I think that it's still a really good conference, and there's a lot of obstacles in the way, but I think, you know, if Kawhi is out most of the season, if Jamal Murray misses a lot of time, like, they just, I don't think you're going to end up on top of Denver or on top of the Clippers, but if you can take a game or two off them when you play them, you know, rather than getting swept by them every year, if you can take a game, you know, here and there off other teams because the West is just a little bit less crazy than it has been, they're all the little things that add up at the end of the year and kind of push that win total from 35 to 42, you know, and then all of a sudden you're in that 8th seed or you're in that play-in game and things are starting to look up again. So I think it's the stars are aligning somewhat for this team to make their best push yet, especially in this kind of era. Whether that happens, you know, I've thought that probably 10 times in the last 15 years. So whether it happens or not, it's a different story. But if they can, I think health is just the thing, and that's the thing that we can't really quantify. You know, you can't, there's no stat for
that's kind of how what I'm trying to say. Like, they're better than this, but can we trust them to stay healthy? It's like, if they do, they'll be good. But
Towns' career is such a weird one with health, because he was like an Iron Man for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
That he just didn't miss games, and then the last 2 years it's been kind of a couple freak accidents as well. Like, I think I'd be more concerned if he kind of had, you know, knee problems or hamstring problems, something that seems to reoccur. The broken wrists doesn't bother me as much long term. I think I'd like it if he fell down less and less awkwardly.
Yep,
but
absolutely.
I think that I won't be surprised. Like, I don't think it'd be surprising to anyone if Towns played 82 games next year. Like, I'd probably be more surprised if D'Lo played 82 games, because I think he's only played more than 80 games once in his career. But he's also a guy who doesn't really get long-term injuries, but he does have a knee problem. I think that's maybe the second or third time he's he's had that same problem or like similar problem. Thing.
Yeah,
yeah. I think it
shows up and bothers him for a while, and then he'll miss time, and then come back later.
I don't. Yeah, I don't think it's something that like is going to keep him out for an entire season. But I won't be surprised if throughout his career he has to have that same surgery another time, which is a 15 to 20 game kind of surgery, and that can really derail a season. Anthony Edwards, I think I heard him say that sprained ankle that he had this offseason was the first injury he's ever had. So like, I think
because he's in a Wolves uniform.
Well, today when Jaden McDaniels left that game, start of the game, and I was like, oh, not again. I got up at 6 a.m. to watch that game this morning because I'm obviously in Australia, as you know, the listeners can tell from my accent. Which made me just feel so stupid because like I'm getting up at 6 a.m. to watch the summer league. When he went off, I thought I should just go back to bed, man. Get up to watch Jaden McDaniels, and he goes off 3 minutes into the game. But they just get 70 games out of all of those guys. At least 70 games out of all of them. I think they're a playoff team. And I honestly think they're a top eight side.
Right. I was just going to say, because if they do, they won't all miss at the same time. Because if they do, that's 10 losses. Yeah. So, and you can manage one of them being gone. Cat less
it's
than
Cat,
others,
it's
but
Cat. Yeah, you really can't really like if Cat plays 80 games, I think that you're feeling pretty good about their chances.
Yeah, I mean if he's out, it's Naz Reid and that go from there. But
Nathan Knight, whose name we couldn't even remember to start the podcast. Not good.
No, absolutely,
that's not a good sign if he's playing rotation minutes. I think.
Yeah, we really are insane. I tweeted it out today. I wrote a summer league recap for Canis Hoopas on a Friday evening. It doesn't get much better than you're waking up at 6 a.m. to watch, but...
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The over-unders did come out today, and the Wolves are at 34.5. Under would be horrible. Over,
yeah, I haven't seen that. No,
it's from Points Bet, and Dane Moore tweeted it out too, so it's very credible. You know, no one reported Dane Moore, so. But
I'd be pretty disappointed if they didn't hit the over.
That's what I'm saying, and I think nationally this team is looked upon much worse than locally, just because they've been horrible. I was an outsider looking at the Timberwolves, I would bet the under every single year because
I bet the over every year because I'm overconfident and I lose money at least 70% of the time. So
absolutely, 34 and a half, though.
I'd be betting the over on that. I think a 500 record is not like.
They gotta be.
I don't think that's crazy at all. I think like 45 would be the really high end of their potential, and maybe 35. I feel like 30 under 35 is kind of lower than the lowest I would think they would get. Like, I think they easily win another 10 games than last season. Like Towns missed, I don't know how many off the top of my head, but it would have been at least 20 games.
And D'Lo missed. D'Lo played 45 of 72, so obviously. Those two are pretty key, and Towns played, I got it right here, just 50 of 72. So, yeah.
Yeah, so 22, and Anthony Edwards was bad for 25 games, at least 35 games.
We haven't even brought up his name yet, but new head coach Chris Finch, full offseason, season under his belt.
Yeah.
I love Ryan, but this Chris Finch, and he knows Rosas. Their connection is really good, yeah.
I've been pretty vocal that I thought Saunders was a really bad coach, as much as he was a really good guy,
I love the guy, but man, he was not a good coach.
It was ugly at the start of the season last year, and then when they lost Towns, that kind of like he was dealt a crappy hand, Saunders, but he really didn't play it very he didn't play it very well either, so I'd be super surprised they didn't hit 35 games, man, like just with even just like an a normal non-outlier year of health. Like, they hit 35 games and with a new coach, and I think I'm a really big Chris Finch fan. You know that I'm a really big X's and O's guy, and Chris is really good in that department. And I think the two kind of components of coaching is obviously the X's and O's, or three components, the X's and O's, the game management kind of style as well, just the things you do in game that aren't call plays, you know, like when you call a timeout and when you kind of when you run certain plays, when you instruct teams to play a certain way, and then there's obviously the off the court stuff and just how you get your message across to your guys. I think Finch is pretty good in all three. I actually thought Ryan Saunders was a pretty good X's and O's coach, but he was just horrible in terms of game management. I think that's what really let him down, is he just made the wrong decisions a lot of the time. They'd go into zone.
Wasn't he also like 34? Like, he's not the most experienced dude either. And I think his team needs someone like Finch, yeah.
Yeah, I think you see around the league that these inexperienced guys can usually come in and coach the really good teams. Like, Steve Kerr comes in and wins championships in, you know, year one, year two. Like, Steve Nash comes in this year and looks really good as a coach with Brooklyn.
Kevin Durant,
I think when you have really good players and there's not chaos and turmoil in the ranks, it makes it pretty easy. Or not easy, but at least it gives you a little bit of leeway to make mistakes, whereas Saunders comes in and there's just no room for mistakes, and he made too many, you know, and they're just magnified on a bad team.
No, absolutely with you. It's weird. Like, this team, I would absolutely bet the over two, but I would also not be surprised, I guess. I guess the under is 34-48. That's bad. If they do that, people are getting fired. I don't know if Rosas is on the hot seat at all. I don't think so. Not Finch or anything, but Rosas, is he on? If they go 34-48, you think anything changes here?
I think he's on the hot seat, but I don't think he gets fired. I think that he'd be sweating a little bit at the thought of new ownership coming in with that being his resume. And I don't think
they do that, though. Like, again, if they do that, it's because of injuries.
I don't think it'll happen, but I think if they were just healthy and a really bad team, Rosas would have to be feeling some heat, and especially after doing nothing in the offseason. Like, I think he's lumped the pressure on himself, I think.
It's not like the media has just been the people going, they got to make a trade. Like, Rosas himself goes on podcasts, goes on the radio and says, I'm going to do things through trade. Like, I'm star hunting. And I think now they've kind of shifted from, like, okay, we're star hunting. The philosophy seems to have gone from, all right, we're going to go get Damian Lillard, Ben Simmons, and everyone else and plan it to win. Instead, it's just like, all right, we're taking the guys we have, and we're going to win with these guys. This has been the plan all along, everyone, I swear. And it's like, maybe it works, but no, things have really seemed to change with the landscape of trade so far, at least not working, and nobody wanting a in-jail Malik Beasley and a Ricky Rubio on an expiring contract. Like, well, I guess those aren't the trade chips we thought, and D'Lo on a max contract doesn't seem to be the best ever, with Ant and Cat untouchable. What are you trading? So, it makes sense, too. Like, I don't know.
I think he definitely could have not said it so much. I think everyone understands that those assets aren't the best in hindsight, you know, and that it's tough to make a deal in the NBA. Like, there's just so many kind of differing factors that go into making a deal. But when you lump the pressure on yourself when you talk about trades so often, and that this is the way the team's going to get better. And by not making one, you know, by his own logic, he's kind of saying that the team didn't get better. And I don't think that's true, but that's, you know, if you're following his logic,
just by being healthy. Like,
and that's the narrative. He's quickly pivoted to that narrative real quick. To save his own ass a little bit. So I think we're all buying it again. We're all buying that switching narrative is true as well.
He'd
be a good politician, man. Yes. He knows how to speak and knows how to sell hope. So
I like him despite never winning for some reason. Like, I'm like, this guy knows what he's doing. Like, because I keep thinking he's gonna win. And, like, again, we can tie every single conversation we've had back to health. And that one, too. Yeah. So it's rough.
I just think with Rosas, like, if you look at it through the lens of winning and losing, which is obviously we have to because that's the sport, but it hasn't been good. But then when you look at it, when you kind of break those down into microtransactions, I think that he's probably hit on more than he's missed. It depends, I guess, how you feel about the D'Lo and Wiggins trade, which I kind of call it a bit of a...
Wiggins this team, I think.
Yeah, it's a net neutral, I think. Like I spoke about before, that not only was Wiggins obviously underwhelming when he was here, but he was tied to Towns, and he also brought his reputation down and probably, you know, without knowing Towns, obviously would push him further towards the door when that time came that he did, you know, have the choice to leave the franchise. I think that if Wiggins was still here and you didn't make that deal, I think you're feeling a lot less comfortable about keeping Towns. And that's not only because D'Lo is his friend, just because
I think he wants to be the second guy. I feel it more than Wiggins.
Yeah.
I would do that trade 100 times out of 100 again. I would. I mean, I don't know. Like, I see the downside of it, but Wiggins on this team, I don't think you can win.
No, right. And the pitch, you know, the pitch hurts, but that's the cost of doing business, I think, when you have a guy. And I think the perception's changed a little bit because Wiggins actually had a fairly good year in Golden State, at least by his standards that he'd set before. But he wasn't going to have that year in Minnesota. Like, he wasn't going to have that year being the second guy on a team. And it just made sense that you had to refresh. And when you have a huge contract like that, you either take on, you know, expiring guys who aren't very good, and that plummets you into another rebuild around Towns.
I mean, and Rosas, he loves D'Lo. Like, it's not he was just taking on this guy. He really does think D'Lo can be good. And sure, and we mentioned microtransactions. They lost his first round pick. They also got Jaden McDaniels and Leandro Bolmaro in that same in the same previous draft. So it's like two. I mean, they got like three first rounders, and one of them is a rookie this year. So I'd do that trade 100 times out of 100. I would. I see why people do have issue with it. It's the D'Lo dislikers, D'Lo haters. But sure, I mean, I'd do it. I keep doing it. I think it's fine. And just because I think of how much Wiggins would not help this team win, it's not like he's a terrible player. It's just it didn't work. And we saw it like for 4 years.
I don't think we needed any more of a sample size to know that it wasn't working.
Exactly. And we knew it was going to take a first round pick to get off him. In fact, getting D'Lo back was like a prize at the time when they traded him. It was like, really? Yeah. For Wiggins, we got D'Angelo Russell. Everyone was celebrating it. So no, I have zero issue with it.
And the same thing that what we said before with Towns is we just don't think we've really seen D'Lo at his full potential. I think that he was restricted with injury and kind of the constraints that Saunders had on him just in terms of scheme last season. And obviously comes back from the injury. He's coming off the bench for a little bit. I think it was weird. the last 10 or 11 games of the season, maybe he started, and I think that's when we kind of saw what him and Kat can do together. And it looked good. And D'Lo seemed to be pretty open to being the guy who sets the table for everyone else and who plays as the second option or even the third while Edwards was kind of on that tear at the end of the season. So I think he gets a little bit of a bad rep, D'Lo, for maybe being like a ball hog, but I think that kind of comes from the start of last season when Towns was injured and Edwards wasn't very good. And it was kind of like, well, if he doesn't shoot every shot, it's Jake Layman and Josh Okogie, you know, like, and when you got him on a team with other options, I think he looked more than willing to share the sugar, you know, and
by himself, he's not.
He's a very bad first option if you want to win absolutely. Games.
But as a second or third, cool, you know.
Yeah, and the things he does are like scalable. Like you see in the playoffs that all of a sudden the mid-range contested jump shots come back into in vogue, you know, like that's shots that you need to be able to hit to kind of keep the wheels spinning on a playoff offense. And that's the stuff that D'Lo does. He can get his own shot kind of in any situation. And then he can help others as well on offense. And obviously the defense is an issue, but again, like Trae Young had one of the best playoffs that you'll see, you know, like, and he didn't get any better defensively. These you can cover up, you can plug these holes as long as there's not too many in your starting lineup. And maybe that's the issue with Minnesota, is there might be a little bit too many leaks to plug up, you know, like with Ant and Kat as well. So to me, the defense, I know I'm kind of pivoting here, but the defense, which is obviously the issue, is Anthony Edwards needs to grow into his defensive potential a little bit. I've always said, even before the draft, I don't think his defensive potential is that high, even though that he's obviously really athletic and strong and quick. But if he can get to like a 50th percentile defender, yes, rather than
that's good, 10th, yeah,
you know, like all of a sudden,
and that's a big jump from where he was at. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Like that's no guarantee at all, but if him and Towns kind of get just a little bit better, I think you can survive D'Lo never getting that much better, if that makes sense.
I think that, like, that bridge has been crossed. D'Lo is...
Yeah, yeah.
He is who he is.
And I think Towns will still has a pretty hard ceiling on his defensive potential, but I think we've seen it every year get a little bit better, and this year especially get a little bit better. And with a new scheme, you know, kind of playing up with the level of the screen, I think he'll be better as well. But if Ant can just communicate a little bit better, fall asleep less off the ball, close out better, you know, rather than just sprinting past the guy. Like, all those things are pretty, like, teachable. I don't think that he is a lost cause by any means, where I kind of think D'Lo is a lost cause. But if you can just get Anthony Edwards a little bit closer to his defensive potential, then I don't think you have as many leaks in the defenses, maybe you do now, and that might get you to like average defensively and top 10 offensively, and that's a win, I think.
No, I'm with you there. I think they have a shot. They'll be, I think Rosas said it somewhere, they're trying to be a top 10 offense and then just a fine defense. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
That 18th, 20th, whatever, but enough to get you into the top 10, and I think that's what they're shooting for. But as we approach about 44 minutes here, I figure unless you got any huge, big-time talking points, we'll start wrapping it up here.
No, I think we've had a pretty good kind of... We've jumped from topic to topic, we've hit on a lot of stuff today. And I'm happy that you kind of had me on here to get some wolf's thoughts out of my brain that I've been saving up for a few weeks. I haven't done a podcast for a few weeks, so that was like 2 weeks' worth of built up thoughts in my brain.
And if we end up figuring out your audio, thanks for having me on too. But
I'm sure I'll have to make a note. Well, I guess I'm making a note now that if you're listening to my podcast, that it is coming from yours, so that's why I'm kind of being interviewed rather than doing
it. Is a weird form. I've never done something like this, but it's a weird I'm trying to like balance it out, but yeah,
I think it's a lazy kind of thing for me to not have to get someone else this weekend.
I mean, you'd just be saying the same things you said on this. It'd just be exhausting. But no, I'm with you. It's been fun though. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it has been. Thanks for having me on, and hopefully we can do this again. Maybe, you know, we do the opposite way next time or something. But
yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Definitely kind of do this again, and I'm happy to see you over at Canis and riding on your Friday nights, wasting your Friday nights.
Summer League, yes. My Friday night tonight consists of recapping Summer League game and talking about the Wolves on a podcast. It doesn't get much better, but no, as always, YouTube, Minnesota Sports Daily, Spotify, Apple, Minnesota Sports Daily. You can find me there covering the Twins, Wild, Wolves, Vikings. Pretty much, yeah. Thanks, Jake. It's been a lot of fun. See you next time.
Thank you.